Well, good morning, ladies and gentlemen. I thank NIJ for the opportunity today, and I'm very honored to be here with so many colleagues. Again, my name is Kim Ward from Baltimore County. I'd like to speak this morning about a domestic violence lethality assessment program that's being used in all 21 counties in Maryland, developed through some research by Dr. Jackie Campbell, also sponsored by NIJ, and a guy named David Sargent, who was formerly a lieutenant at MPD and now runs the Maryland Network Against Domestic Violence. As I said, it's running in all in 21 counties in Maryland, but it's about 66 agencies, and our agency is one of the first large agencies to try it, so I thought I'd start with this little map about Baltimore County. I'd like to let you know that 800,000 people live here. We have one police department serving that whole territory. We did the pilot down there in the bottom right-hand section, the purple section for the Baltimore Ravens. Unfortunately, it also handles most of the serious domestic incidences and domestic violence cases that we have. They average about 300 a month in that particular area, so keeps us busy. We have 10 precincts, and we have a domestic violence coordinator position in every precinct. I say that because many of you will be standing out there saying, oh, yeah, where do I get one of those? And we'll talk about that under the leadership area. Most of our population lives within 5 miles of the Beltway. You see we surround the city, as I said, like a horseshoe. There are up to 101 homicides year-to-date. We average about 35 to 40 homicides year-to-date, which is why we're so interested in retaining this program. Again, the assessment program is a tool, but it's been very successful for us, and I'd like to just spend a few minutes on that program. In Maryland, you can see that our partner homicide averages about 1,200 per year, 69 men, women, and children in Maryland. Our goal was to use this instrument directed by this committee to look at what an officer can do on the scene to deal with the danger of death at the scene at the time that they're there, sort of the golden hour that the healthcare industry uses or the golden 24 hours to get intervention into that home. A lot of the committee members included DSS, which are critical, the prosecutors, of course, law enforcement, and domestic violence advocates, our nonprofit providers. Dr. Campbell found some key things in her research, and she helped us to identify the things that many law enforcement officers know by instinct. What is the victim's perception of what's going on here? What is their fear level? What is the access to weapons? What happens with the threats of violence at the scene? What's the suspect's employment status, et cetera? You can read the rest. We then started, as we're moving along in our committee, to say, hey, can we do a pilot program in this North Point area to see how it goes before we go countywide? We go into a whole separate script, and here's what that looked like. This beautiful family, the Browning family, in February, while we're running the pilot, this young man, Nicholas, kills his entire family. He's 5 days short of his 16th birthday, gets in a dispute with dad. You can see the headlines from the Baltimore papers around this particular topic. A very big tragedy, and one that many people were shaking their head at, but aren't a family of note on our radar screen, so to speak. Why is that? Because everything's out of the norm. There's no history of violence in the home. There's no violence where the children have touched the criminal justice system. There's no suspected mental illness or behavioral problems or substance abuse. Kids go to an elite school. There was some section about bullying, but you get the picture. 3 months later, Lewin Powell kills his mother in a Towson suburb of this particular area, and he's an elite student at McDonough, a private prep school. Takes the mother's body out, puts it in a garage. Next day, dad comes home. He worked at night. Dad's sleeping on the couch. Next day, Lewin gets up, tries to do the same thing with dad. So now we're almost 16 hours later. What is that about? Again, the media coverage, unbelievable. But again, the same script. Not on our radar screen. Looks like a great kid, great grades, hasn't touched criminal justice system, etc. Maybe a little bit on the overbearing side with mom, we're not sure yet. And then almost a year later, as we start concluding the pilot program in Dundalk for domestics, we get this tragic scene at one of our Sheratons in Towson, where Mr. Palente decides to kill his entire family and commit suicide. They were down here visiting their oldest daughter, who attends Loyola College. Again, same kind of situation where we don't really have any factors on the radar screen. A family appears to be a traditional family from an affluent area. FBI has this case right now. So like you, we're doing the things you're doing. We're tracking domestics. We're looking at charts. We're looking at graphs. We're trying to figure out who's committing What kinds of homicides and how are they domestically related? We have a fatality review board. But we decide to stick with the script, come back to the assessment program, and to work with Dr. Campbell's information. What are we asking the officers to do? We're asking them to do what they normally do. Just go in and take a few more minutes. Ask a few more questions than you usually do. And if you get a certain answer in these questions, then we know there's potential for fatal behavior. So we want you to actually talk to the lady or the man that's the victim in this case. And if the screening form is checked off at a certain level, then you literally try to ask that person to get on the phone with a counselor at the scene. Now, many of you are saying, what? How does that work? And that's what we got, too. But the fact is it's been very successful. And the fact that the officers there are saying, listen, you answered yes to these top questions, there's a likelihood that you're really in danger and that lethality is a possibility. Please talk to this person. You can't believe the difference. They really do respond. So that immediacy of hooking them up with a counselor. This, I know, is overwhelming, but once an officer uses it three or four times, they don't need the training module anymore. They know how to handle it from the scene, and they actually end up developing relationships with counselors, and they know the players, they know the people, and it creates a better structured system. As I stated earlier, we're lucky and have a luxury of having domestic violence coordinators in each precinct. What do? They get every report that comes in on domestics from that precinct. They handle every background. They make appointments the next day with the nonprofit advocate to go out and actually meet with this victim again and to answer questions, to continue the treatment process, to try to deal with whatever's needed for that family, everything from the children down to the family dog, and again, immediate access to resources. This would be, of course, the chart the domestic violence coordinator would follow, and of course, they do this every day, so they're very familiar with it. Here's the simple form, one more form. It's not that long. It may take you 5 or 10 more minutes at the scene, and remember, we have this philosophy when you're out of service in law enforcement, right? You're actually problem solving. When you're in service, you're actually doing preventative patrol, waiting for 911 calls for service, etc. So it kind of deals with that principle. But the first three questions, if they trigger a yes response, the protocol comes in and the counselor's contacted. If those are no, and there's any answer to the four of the next six questions, then the protocol comes into place. And of course, an officer can also impact or influence the protocol automatically. I know those were small, so I'll put these up. The first three questions, ever used a weapon against you, ever threatened to kill you? You think the person might try to kill you? Any of those are yes, the protocol is automatically initiated. The rest of the questions, four of those questions come into play. Once you have a total of four, the protocol is in place, and of course, if the officer states it should happen. When we looked at the numbers of calls for service before the pilot in this particular pilot area, you can see the calls for service that we had, over 2,000 repeat offenders, 124, so we're trying to get the most serious family situations in that area. The year of the pilot, calls for service down considerably, and, of course, repeat offender calls down for considerably. What were the biggest results? We were shocked. We were guessing in the 30s for victims screened in the high dangerous area. It turned out to be 56% of them answered in that area. 85% of them spoke to a lethality line counselor. 96% of them agreed to the follow-up home visits, and a third of the callers went to treatment. 11% of them actually accessed follow-up treatment, including perhaps housing. What were the leadership issues we experienced as an agency? Of course, our relationship with external partners was critical. If you don't have them, it's a little hard to build this base. We were really blessed to have a lot of that infrastructure in place. Culture, what is the attitude of your officers in the area of domestic violence? Is there emotional intelligence or is it an immature culture about the issue, and how do you as leaders attend to that? What is the attitude in general with your county, the role of state's attorney, prosecutors, judges, etc.? What are you doing on the prevention front, and how does that outreach work? And there are a number of examples here. Community newsletters to make sure the word is reaching the community. Outreach to diverse populations. What special plans do you have in place to make that work? How can you get out help cards and other things to local libraries in areas where people are constantly trafficking? What happens with the role of the chief in management? In our case, our chief came on board, said, absolutely, we're going to stop. The pilots showed me enough success. We're going countywide. This is how we're going to work it. Give me a plan. Figure out how it's going to work. And he set the tone, and that was obviously a big support. Assessment and evaluation, just like in any problem-solving process. And then increased workload, just to be honest about that, anytime you're dealing with a non-profit outreach structure. The word gets out, things happen sort of through quiet leadership and the spread of the tipping point, and then all of a sudden you have more volume. So that is a reality that has to be managed in this. But in fairness, we haven't seen an overly abundant amount of people going into shelters, so it's worked very well so far, although we're just in our first month for the whole county. Prevention and intervention within 24 hours is the key crux of this success of this program, how to get in there immediately. This is just a copy of our first page of our special order, which again shows everybody what is the real goal and then what's the relationship to who we are as a department. If we're really going to be about service, if we're really getting to the highest levels of service and looking at how to prevent victimization, this is what we're going to be about. Our legislators helped us this year in Maryland. They did make a decision on temporary orders that judges now have the authority to have suspects temporarily surrender firearms, and then in a final order they can permanently order that. Again, more prevention efforts, just some examples here for how this can work. But the training part only took one roll call. We went through all the roll calls. Domestic violence person handled that for us. Obviously, you have to have different rank structures, understand the program, and say, okay, this is what we're going to do. Take it to the field and make sure the message gets down for compliance. One of the other lessons learned besides the high danger rate was the immediate interaction reduced the gap in service provisions and increased the number of people accepting services, which was, of course, a big goal. What were some of the other things? Decreased in time delays of delivery of service. We increased interactions between victims, police officers, and advocates. We had an increased number of people receiving services. A decrease in overall victimization and levels of injury were also decreased. An increase in conviction rate. Of course, we have court advocates as well, which was a help. Decrease in the amount of time spent on these types of calls for our officers, which was the antithesis of what they were anticipating, I think. And decreases in the amount of time spent for follow-up. I'd like to leave this up because we don't have a follow-up session, but we're very happy to speak more in depth about the program for anyone who's interested. I really want to thank David Sargent, the people from Maryland Network on Domestic Violence, all the other advocates in the county have put so much hard work in this. And again, Chris, I'm very grateful to NIJ for the opportunity to present. Thank you.